Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special live edition of Your Call. We are here at the San Francisco Public Library. Thank you all so much for coming tonight. On this special show, we are continuing our discussions about this country's caregiving crisis. More than 53 million people provide unpaid care to a loved one. Over 60% are working in addition to caregiving, and 30% are also taking care of children. As the population ages, the caregiving crisis is only growing. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. The Trump GOP budget cuts will just make this crisis worse. Here in California, 3.4 million people are expected to lose their Medi-Cal, and hundreds of thousands will lose food assistance, according to Governor Gavin Newsom's office. So tonight, we are going to talk about this crisis, but we're also going to talk about much-needed solutions. Now, it's just a fact, the solutions will not come from the federal level, and that means they have to come from state and local levels. So I'm really happy to have three great guests here tonight to discuss these issues. Assemblymember Matt Haney represents the eastern side of San Francisco. In the state assembly, he is chair of the Committee on Housing and Community Development. As one of the few renters in the legislature, Assemblymember Haney also serves as the chair of the Legislative Renters Caucus. He is the sponsor of AB 283. This is a bill to authorize in-home supportive services workers statewide to bargain for wages, benefits, and training opportunities with one unified voice. And we will talk more about this bill tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, Assemblymember Haney.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Kelly Dierman is Executive Director of the Department of Disability and Aging Services at the San Francisco Human Services Agency. Kelly coordinates services to veterans, older adults, adults with disabilities, and their families to maximize health, safety, and independence so they can remain active in their community for as long as possible and maintain the highest quality of life. Kelly Dierman has more than 15 years of experience developing policies and services to help ensure San Franciscans thrive as they age. Kelly, thanks for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Chris Durrens is a documentary filmmaker who's worked on more than a dozen films for PBS Frontline, including College Inc., which is about for-profit education, and The Madoff Affair, which is a great documentary. His most recent project, Caregiving, takes us inside the lives of six family and professional caregivers across the country. The film's executive producer is Bradley Cooper, and it's really an incredible documentary. You can watch it online now at wellbeings.org. Chris, thank you so much for this great film that you made, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Great to have all of you. Thank you. So, Assemblymember Haney, let's start off with you. Can you talk about the caregiving crisis in California and what you have learned from a variety of community members since you introduced AB 283?
Well, thank you again for having me and for everyone who is listening and with us tonight. You know, I think that caregiving, of course, first starts with how essential care itself is. Every single one of us either is currently receiving care or will someday need care. Every single person in here is going to age, whether we like it or not, and will likely want to be able to age at home. Over 90% of people want to age at home and want to be able to be with the people that they love. So this is really a fundamental thing that affects every single one of us. And I think it's a fundamental responsibility of government for people who are elderly, disabled, sick, to make sure that they are taken care of and not abandoned is one of the most important and essential functions of government. Well, right now we're failing at that. There are so many people across our state who are not able to receive care, whether at home or within other institutions, because we are not providing the support for caregiving. Here in California, the average wage for a caregiver is just around minimum wage, about $16 an hour. That's only 40% or so of a living wage. There is not a single county in our state right now where we are paying a living wage to caregivers. So the people who are doing the most essential work, the work that we most need and that actually saves the state a lot of money, because you're taking care of folks and making sure they don't go into much more expensive institutions, making sure that they don't get to a place where they're homeless or having deeper physical or mental health challenges, we are not providing the support for those folks. We are, in fact, cutting back on the support for them. And the result is what we're seeing, more and more people who need care who are not receiving it, and more a greater and greater squeeze for the people who are providing that care. That's, I think, the biggest challenge that California is facing right now, and it's getting worse as our population ages.
And just a question on the wages, because this is so important. So caregivers who are members of SEIU Local 2015 and United Domestic Workers, AFSCME Local 3930 are also sponsoring AB 283. Caregivers must negotiate contracts county by county, which is a very fragmented system that results in caregivers earning wages just above minimum wage. And even when they work full-time, many caregivers qualify for public assistance. So can you talk about AB 283? It moved to the Senate, right? And do you think it has a chance of passing there?
Well, so we have this crazy system right now that is really a setup. You have 58 different counties all negotiating individually with caregivers in their county. Over 30 of those counties haven't even reached a contract with their caregivers at all. Most are either paying minimum wage or just above minimum wage. And they're also not getting the other basics that all of us need to survive. They don't receive health care. They don't receive pensions. They don't even get paid for all of the hours that they put in. Many caregivers, of course, are working 80, 90, 100 hours a week. They're not paid for those hours. And so this responsibility that is so essential for our state is being punted to counties that are then shirking that responsibility altogether, because they know that if they don't provide the care for those folks in their state or in their county, that the state will ultimately have to step in. And so what we need to do as a state as a whole is take full responsibility for what is such a critical responsibility that for folks who are elderly, disabled, in need of care at home. And what the best way to do that is to actually set the wages, set the salary, set the health care, set the retirement at the state level, rise it up to a living wage for everyone, and have an opportunity for all the caregivers in the state to be a part of setting that with us at the state level, and not have this 58 county thing that is clearly, clearly failing to provide not only the support for the caregivers, but also the access to the care that people rely on.
So this would allow in-home supportive service workers to bargain for wages and benefits. Can you just talk about how this will change caregiving in this state and how it will change life for caregivers?
So this will mean that instead of 58 different tables where they're setting these in different standards, all of which are far too low, we would have one table, one contract with the over 700,000 workers, home care workers across the state. We'd set a certain standard at the state level for all of these workers, and it could vary a bit across regions in terms of the levels, but this would be a contract that they could then fight for and win a much higher level of pay. Basics that we provide to all of our state workers, like retirement. You know, some of the things that they talk about, they don't get a day off. They don't get a sick day. So if they're sick, who is going to take care of the person that relies on them? There's nobody. And so they can't take days off. And so the strain on them is also unimaginable. So we want to lift up the standards for everyone, have one much higher level of support at the state. And we can also provide training and standards and all of the things that really treat these folks as the professionals that they are. And so the state would take responsibility and also give a lot more power to these workers who deserve it to be able to fight with a much bigger number and be able to help to win, I think, the standards and the support that they so desperately need. So that this bill would be one of the biggest organizing victories for workers in our state ever, to take 700 plus thousand workers and have them win the ability to bargain at the state level and raise the standards and wages and supports at the state level would be a dramatic change to how this is done currently, and hopefully would fundamentally alter the reality in meeting this caregiving and care crisis we're facing.
Kelly, you are executive director of the Department of Disability and Aging Services at the San Francisco Human Services Agency. You are also a caregiver. When I started caregiving, I just did not know how difficult it would be to navigate the system. And this is after doing years of shows about our broken healthcare system. I remember going live at 10 a.m. and I would make 15 calls just to get my loved one an appointment. And if my phone rang at 9:55, I was so desperate to get that call that I would answer it and then go live at 10 o'clock because you're waiting for a call. It's hard to get doctor's appointments. It's hard. One of my loved ones needed to see a psychiatrist. I couldn't find anyone that takes Medicare in the area. I knew it was broken. I just didn't know how broken it was. So can you talk about, for the caregivers in the audience, what other resources are available that they might not know about? And then people who know that one day they might become caregivers, how can they prepare so they're not caught off guard and just completely overwhelmed?
So that's a big question, and I will start with the second question first. So for me, the professional is personal and the personal is professional. I consider myself really fortunate that for the last 16 years, along with my husband and my kids, we've lived with my parents as they age. And my dad is right here, and he's 94, so yay. And I think we are also really fortunate that caregiving for me has been to do all of the administrative duties. It is to find the caregiver, to make the doctor's appointments, to get the prescriptions that are needed, to all of those things, which take, you know, a huge amount of time if you're not used to doing it. I would say the first and most important thing for families and for friends is that you need to be talking about this. You need to talk about what is it that you want. Do you want to stay at home, or do you want to go live in an assisted living? Like, what is it that you want? It's really important to have those conversations before there's a tragedy, before we're in the most vulnerable time, so that then we can start setting plans. It's also important to talk, well, who are your doctors now? Or do you have a doctor now? Let's figure that out. Like, all of these things, talk about when people are in a state when they can talk about it before there's a crisis. That's the biggest piece. There's also important to know that as caregivers, there are different networks, at least in San Francisco. Like, we have the San Francisco Village and Village to Village, where you can meet other caregivers, or if they're like, I need somebody to go grocery shopping for me today, that can happen. So you want to build a network, because it can feel really isolating as a caregiver, as you're trying to do this, as you're trying to work, as you're trying to take care of your kids. It can be a lot. But start building your network, start talking to each other. That'll make a huge difference. And the second piece, so in our office, we run the in-home supportive services program. And it's a Medi-Cal program, so it's funded federally, state, and local. And I will say that in San Francisco, we do have a contract. We're really happy to say that our county pays one of the highest wages, although it is not a living wage, I will say that. And then there's all these rules around you can only work 50 hours a week, and people need more than that, so that makes it complicated and difficult. But I would say the first thing is if you are Medi-Cal eligible, I really encourage you to go online and look up the Department of Disability and Aging Services, and you can call our hub, because that will help determine eligibility and if you qualify. There are a bunch of people in San Francisco who qualify but don't know that they qualify. And so if you are at home caring for your loved one, which, yay, but if that is taking away from your other employment, you can get paid to do this. And you should, and you are entitled to it. And it's not, this is a workforce issue. This keeps people in their homes. This keeps people employed. And it's also really important to note that I totally agree with you, Assemblyman, that we need to uplift caregivers. Caregiving is a noble profession. Caregiving is real. And without these caregivers, how many people would be in hospitals? Which then the hospitals would be filled and la, 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 right? So we need to do whatever we can to uplift caregivers, to get them the training that they need, to make sure they have insurance and retirement and all of those things, because they are doing the job that is keeping people happy, keeping people living with dignity. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, in the documentary Caregiving, takes us inside the lives of six family and professional caregivers. Now, we were talking earlier, you grew up in London, right? How much did you know about the caregiving crisis in the United States before you took on this project?
Absolutely nothing. I was fortunate in that my parents are both healthy, but also it was actually weirdly in the course of making the film that I realized how much of a caregiver I was. And I think that is a common feeling. It's not only the sense of isolation that we've been talking about earlier, but also this sense that most people who are caregivers don't necessarily identify as caregivers, and so don't even necessarily think that they may be a person who should apply for the supports that might be available, that might know how to navigate a system that is already complex. And so I think that it's not just a case of needing to uplift caregiving, but bring caregiving into the national conversation so more people see that what they are doing is caregiving and is an essential part of the fabric of a healthy and happy society. And I think that's became, as I was making the film, became more and more of an important mission among the whole team, really, that was making the film.
And you've said that this was the most meaningful and challenging film you've ever worked on. Can you tell us more about that?
You're asking people to open up their lives at times of crisis, at times when, for many family members, for the professional caregivers that they're working with, that they are navigating serious illness, they're navigating a journey towards the end of life, likely. These things are not talked about socially, not as a society, not talked about enough, and so become really, really hard to deal with. And then we come along and say, will you share that with us and with the rest of the country? It's a hard ask. But what we found was that in traveling the country and speaking to hundreds and hundreds of families, as we pieced together the stories that went into making this film, that people really did want to share their stories. That when they realized that they would be heard, that they would be seen, that became profoundly meaningful to them. There were some cases where the risk to a family member was too great in terms of their own health, their own mental well-being, for them to be able to do what they wanted to do. But for the most part, where we were able to go into someone's home, go through the door into someone's home and share their life with them, that they found that provided them real solace at a time of need.
You highlight young, very young caregivers. And we recently did a show about young people caregiving. The numbers are just growing, and they've got now online support groups. I mean, we're talking about young people just out of college who are now taking care of their parents full time, and it's So difficult. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, and I think it's not just people out of college. I mean, the numbers of kids in middle school, in high school, who are caring for a grandparent, who are caring for a sibling, are stunning. The estimates, and most people believe that they're a vast undercount, but the estimates are that there are about 5 million kids who are looking after, who are providing hours and hours a week of care. Some schools, so you talked about solutions, and I'm really glad that you wanted to frame part of the debate in that way, because there are also things that one can do about that to help support some of these kids. For example, in Rhode Island, they have started asking incoming students whether they are caregivers, whether they are providing hours and hours of care a week. And some of the numbers they found were shocking. In some schools, they were finding that 40% of their student body, 40% of their student body were active caregivers, to the point where it's harming their school performance. So they're late, they're leaving early, they're not able to finish homework, graduation is at risk. And yet these are the kids that are, in some senses, model citizens. They're the ones that are, you know, helping keep the fabric of our families and our communities together. And they should be supported and not punished. They shouldn't be getting detentions. And so we can look at that and say that that's, you know, that's terrible and shocking. But there's also stuff that all of us in this room can do, because so many of us are connected with these schools. And one can bring it up with our local school districts and just say simply, ask the question, how many of your kids are caregivers? Just start with that simple question. And if you have numbers like some of the schools in Rhode Island, 30, 40%, then that's going to start encouraging administrators and principals to do something about it. And in New York, so I live in New York, there's a bill going through the Assembly, and they're trying to get it through the Senate, that is trying to do exactly that. And I hope that more and more school districts do that. And we don't need Washington, D.C. to do that. It is something that we can do in our local communities, and I hope that more and more do.
That is Chris Darens, a documentary filmmaker whose most recent project is called Caregiving. It takes us inside the lives of 6 family and professional caregivers across the country, and it's really a beautiful and really heartbreaking also film, but so important. And you can watch it now online at wellbeings.org. We're also joined today by Kelly Dearman, Executive Director of the Department of Disability and Aging Services at the San Francisco Human Services Agency. And Assemblymember Matt Haney represents the eastern side of San Francisco. Assemblymember Haney is the sponsor of AB 283, a bill to authorize in-home supportive service workers statewide to bargain for wages, benefits, and training opportunities with one unified voice. This is your call. We'll be back after this. This is your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. This is something that I've been thinking a lot about. And when I go back to the hardest times of caregiving, I think what would have helped is like a 24/7 line like we now have for 988. The warm lines that we have in California. There's an amazing line for parents and students. Unfortunately, they're not getting funding from the California legislature. Hopefully, the funding will come back. But I think a 24/7 line where I could have called and said, I don't know what to do. Who do I call? I'm trying to get an appointment. Nobody has one. I haven't eaten. I haven't slept. Can you help me? So I thought that would be amazing. And then the other thing is just, you know, my dad was on hospice for the last 5 weeks of his life, and I just did not know how comprehensive hospice is. It was amazing. The prescription drugs came to the door. The supplies came to the door. It was like, is an angel here? I don't have to call and stand in line and try to find these supplies, and a nurse came to the house. I was blown away. So those are on my my top two, and then we'll talk about some form of universal health care in a little bit. But Kelly, what do you hear from people you work with about the changes that they would like to see?
So can I just go back to hospice and palliative care? Don't sleep on those, people. Those are big. Palliative care is for anyone who has chronic illness. You can get palliative care, which gives you more wraparound services and more, so you get more help. You don't just have one person looking at you, but the whole gamut. And hospice is the absolute best. We have that for my mom as well. And it is like an angel who just shows up with the medicine, and nurses just show up. And anyway, it's fantastic. If you don't know about hospice, we can also help with that. So what we are hearing is it's really hard to navigate the system, as you said earlier. And so we try to make that easier in San Francisco. And while we're not open 24 hours, we are open every day. And you can call us. You can go online. You can walk in. And we will help determine if you are eligible, first of all, for IHSS or whatever other services you're entitled to. We can, if you do not have, like, it's about 80% of people who use IHSS, and there are 29,000 in San Francisco, they have a friend or family member who they want to provide the care. The beauty of this system in California is that you can choose whoever you want to do it. We don't decide for you. You decide who you want to do this. But if you don't have a person to do it, we also, through our in-home supportive services public authority, we have a registry of people who have been trained and they're trained caregivers, and you can decide which one of those people you want to do it. Or for those people, there's a small percentage of people who aren't able to navigate their own care, but they want to stay at home. And so we have the contract mode, and that's offered through Homebridge, where they will assign a worker for you. So what we know is that people, there are a lot of people who are just, I don't know if they're afraid to come in or think, well, it's my mom, so should I really be getting paid for this? And yes, the answer is yes, you should. And so please come in, and please let us help you determine if you're eligible. And it's great for Medi-Cal recipients. We know it gets really hard if you're not eligible. We do have a small program for people who are just over the cut. And so we can, you do a cost sharing with the for the actual caregiving, which is still cheaper than going through an agency, which can be anywhere from like $30 to $50 an hour. So we are doing what we can to stem the tide. But I also know that people are tired. Like, we need more caregivers, right? One of the things that I'm hearing is that it is very isolating being a caregiver. And where are the support groups? And how can I talk to somebody else who is in my position? And how can I be seen? So you feel very unseen in this. And even though there's so many of us out here doing it, we feel like we must be the only ones doing it.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about how you can have access to palliative care if you have a chronic disease. I did not know that. I think part of the problem is that we just don't know what resources are available. So can you elaborate on that and what chronic diseases specifically?
So I don't know all of them, but I know so in some parts of the city, I know they're doing this already for people who have diabetes. Or if you have, a chronic heart condition, these are things you talk to your doctor about. And, it's really interesting that oftentimes you have to tell your doctor, like, so would I qualify for palliative care here? Can I, is this a thing? I don't know what the issue is, why they won't just tell you. And I also know that some hospitals who have palliative care teams will tell you that it's for people who are only going to live another 6 months. But be clear, that's hospice. That's not palliative care. Palliative care is very different. Palliative care helps you to maintain your lifestyle while being able to and manage your lifestyle. So don't let them trick you into saying that. So I'm part of the San Francisco Palliative Care Work Group. Our goal is for everyone in San Francisco to fill out their healthcare decisions. because whether you're a gazillionaire or not, what you want at the end, down to do you want music, down to who do you want in the room, do you want anyone in the room, down to where do you want to be, in my family, we talk about it all the time. And I would encourage you, if you're not having the conversations, to start having those conversations. Let's put it all out in the open. Let everybody know what's going on. But we have to start talking to each other about caregiving. And by talking about caregiving, you'll also talk about palliative care, hospice care, and we can start to be seen.
And we actually did a show about how to get your end-of-life affairs in order. It's very important. We're living at a time when you've got online subscriptions and passwords. And if you don't share that with your loved ones, they don't know how to access the information. So you can search for that show at klw.org, and we're going to do more in the future. And we have a question from someone in the audience. Hi, if you can say your name and where you're from.
Hi, Matthew from San Francisco. I wanted to take a moment to raise awareness for a wonderful solution to freeing up money for all of this expanding need for care. And it involves universal health care, perhaps. One of the biggest expenditures, single illness expenditures, is multiple sclerosis, because people with multiple sclerosis live a long time and need a lot of care. I have a similar issue. Multiple sclerosis is curable. Under the NHS in England, HSCT is standard of care and is curing MS patients. Cannot get it here. Just changing that would save billions that could be spent and available to provide this care. And I don't know how we change that, but I'm trying to do it by just raising awareness for that. When diseases are curable and the system just doesn't want to provide them, and this is published peer-reviewed research, it's standard of care under the NHS, but it's not a standard of care here or in most other countries that have socialized medicine. So part of the problem is the medical system doesn't care, and we have to fight for ourselves.
Thank you so much. I want to add one thing to this question. It's really important. So AB 1400, it's got another number now. I believe it's 2200. This is the California Guaranteed Health Care for All Act. And we did a show about this in February 2022. The vote was supposed to happen, but Assemblyman Ash Kalra pulled the bill, saying it didn't have the votes to pass. Supporters say he should have forced Democrats to go on the record with a nay or a yay vote. Because Democrats had a supermajority back then, and they still do. So I called his office right before this event. He introduced it last year. And his staff said that because of all of the budget issues, they don't know when he's going to introduce it again. So Assemblymember Haney, given that there are so many cuts coming to health care, and given that people are so desperate, people say now is the time for California Democrats to pass some kind of universal health care. What are your thoughts?
I agree completely. I'm a co-author, a principal co-author of that bill, and have been very strongly supportive of Medicare for All or single payer in California. That particular bill that died was before I got into the legislature, so I wasn't there when that happened. But this is not going away. The reality where every single person in our state needs to have health care, and we cannot rely on the federal government clearly to provide that for us. The gentleman who spoke, one of the reasons why universal health care is so important is because people need preventative care. They need to, from the very beginning, from the day they're born and before that, be able to have an ongoing relationship with a physician, regular checkups. If there are challenges that they have, that they're able to get that early. And everything becomes more expensive and more challenging for us as individuals and within the system if you treat everything as an emergency because people don't have access to care in an ongoing way. That's also true when we look at home caregiving. In many ways, care at home is also a form of preventative care. This is the way that you make sure that people are provided for, that you're monitoring symptoms, that you're providing that care in a low barrier way as possible, and that you're able to prevent things from becoming more serious and identify them. And so tragically, what we're seeing right now is a very rapid move in the other direction. We are going to lose potentially over 3 million people from Medi-Cal coverage because of this Trump bill that just passed. And $1 trillion in cuts nationally to Medicaid, over $180 billion in cuts here in California. And so we are not a poor state. We have a lot of resources, a lot of billionaires, a lot of corporations that are making a lot of money. And whatever way that we organized how we use the resources that we have and rely on the federal government, we've got to go back to the drawing board. And the first conversation that we need to have is, how do we make sure everyone in our state has access to health care in light of the fact that for the foreseeable future, we can't just rely on the federal government to be there for us.
So before we take the next question, given that Democrats have a supermajority in Sacramento, what's it going to take? Can you give us a sense of what is happening there, the lobbying that's going on? What will it take?
Well, so the approach that California had taken for a number of years, which I think there was a lot of value to it, which is every chance we could, we expanded who was eligible for Medi-Cal or Medicaid in California. So undocumented folks were covered, covering as many, if not all, kids covered, expanding the age group. So in many other states, folks don't qualify except at a much older age. We expanded the age that was, we expanded the income level. So we were trying to get to as close to universal coverage as possible by expanding Medi-Cal. The challenge that we have now is that's not a viable approach when the federal government is slashing Medicaid left and right. So even the approach we were going to take to single payer was going to rely on all of those federal funds that come in for Medicaid to be able to provide single payer. So we're going to have to look, I mean, this is a program that for single payer, on top of the cuts to Medi-Cal, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, this is a massive program, right? So how we fund that and what role the federal government has in providing support in an ongoing way, I think we're in some ways in a new situation where we can't just say we're going to continuously expand Medi-Cal to provide as close to as possible or fully universal coverage. We're going to need a new framework here and a new way of thinking. So we haven't started that conversation about single payer again, but the approach of just expand Medi-Cal is clearly not one that's going to get us there, because now we're in a contract Medi-Cal world.
Well, and also, just to let people know, because there are so many elements to this bill, the LA Times reports that Covered California estimates that as many as 660,000 of the roughly 2 million people in the program will either be stripped of their coverage or drop out due to increased costs. Those who stay could be hit with a monthly premium increase of up to 66%. So I just went on Covered California to see how much I would have to pay if I were just on the market right now. The lowest program is $700 a month. So if you add 66%, who can afford that? So that's the thing. We're talking Medi-Cal, Medicare. There are some cuts in Medicare also, and then people on the Affordable Care Act. So we just have to make sure that we get the information out, because it's going to affect so many people. And we have another question, and thank you for your question. We have another question over here. Hi.
DJ, I go by that, from San Francisco. I'm concerned about the background check. I was recently referred to somebody who passed background check, who I did my due diligence later that night. Oh, my gosh. Sexual offense against a child, serious bodily harm with a deadly weapon, arson, out of state, and then now lives here. And I asked Google, can you send people like with this history to vulnerable elders and people with disability? It said no. And another person, cursed me out because I didn't want to fraud, tore up my mail and stuff. So I think we need to teach recipients to do your homework and learn how to defend yourself. And secondly, I think we need some younger people, because sometimes I would want somebody to take me out because I was more injured then, and they couldn't because they were older. Stir crazy being inside too long. And so maybe we could recruit some, high school students or college students or something who could also do some physical stuff. And lastly, I just thought it was ironic that the disability space in this library was not available today, right now, for people with disability is occupied by the media.
Thank you, and I'm so sorry to hear about those experiences. And I love the idea of connecting younger people with elders. I think it's a great idea. Your thoughts?
So, first of all, I think that's a great idea, and we do try to be an IHSS bus worker. You have to be at least 18, so we are doing what we can to get younger people involved in all aspects of elder care, so from being a caregiver to being a gerontologist, like everything in between, because we do have a shortage. A background check is required, and that's really upsetting what happened to you, but it only looks for basically fraud, any abuse against an older person. So that's like the biggest thing that it looks for. Of course, if there are other crimes, people are told of that. But, you know, I think mistakes happen and people get through that should not get through. So I think the second thing you said, don't be alone with them the first time and check them out if it's not a friend or a relative, is really important. The registry is operated by another department, but they do their best to make sure that those folks are not the ones who end up being caregivers.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for coming and thanks for sharing that. We have a question over here.
Yeah, hi. My name is Hannah. I'm from Oakland, and I'm an IHSS worker. I've been doing this since 1981, and I work in the disability community in Berkeley and Oakland. I really love that San Francisco has the Homebridge program, the agency option for people who cannot manage the independent provider model, and I really would love to see this go statewide. So, Matt Haney, I nominate you to bring this to the legislature. Having a contract mode option, and I emphasize the word option because it should never be imposed on anybody. I love that the program, the IHSS program, that recipients can hire whoever they want. It's why I got into the program in the first place, because it was an opportunity for me to have that one-on-one relationship with somebody without an agency involvement. However, not everybody is up for that task. And it really discriminates against those who cannot manage that and don't have family members to help them manage that. So I would really like to see a contract mode option available around the state, and it would reduce homelessness, it would reduce emergency room visits, it would be a huge cost saving.
All right, so I got single payer health care I need to get done, statewide bargaining, and an agency, a contract option. Thank you for sharing that, and I know that there's a lot about the San Francisco approach to this that I think is, at least for California, a real gold standard, and I think that's a part of it, and so I will absolutely look into that for the state. Thank you for sharing.
So we're almost out of time, but let's take two more questions, and then we'll wrap things up.
My question is for Chris Durantz, the filmmaker. We've heard a lot about many of the challenges and the difficulties associated with caregiving, but it caught my attention when Chris said that caregiving plays an important role in the health and the happiness of our society. And I found that very interesting. I was curious if you could expand on that. Are there stories of beauty and inspiration that you captured as you were doing your film?
Totally. Thanks so much for that. I think every family, every story is a roller coaster of emotions. And I think for outsiders, it's often seen as something that is just universally stressful and depressing. And it's true that at the extremes, it can be. And to the audience member who talked about their own health suffering, we know that too many caregivers have faced financial problems, mental health problems, physical health problems. Some tragically even pass before the person that they are caring for, and that just shouldn't be the case. But also for many, there are moments of joy, there are moments of happiness. There's a connection that is formed that they probably wouldn't have had in any other situation. And so while the conversations can be difficult, many tell us about these moments of these epiphanies that they get and a relationship with a parent or a sibling. While they wouldn't wish it on other families, they will treasure forever. And many will say that it has become, even though the hardest thing that they've ever gone through, also the most rewarding, the most fulfilling thing that they've ever done. And we tried to capture some of that in the film, but that I think for everyone here who is a caregiver is probably something that's going to resonate with you.
Thank Thank you so much.
I have to say, yes, the most healing moment of my life and most devastating moment of my life has been through caregiving for both parents and through my brother who has paranoid schizophrenia. Both my parents have now passed, but my brother has not. I was actively daily caregiving for him, and now he's back on the streets. I ended up through the stress of all of that. I've gotten sick myself, and in the last 8 months found myself under the care of caregivers. So it really comes around. And the people were very worried because, well, the caregiving that I was giving to others, they'd say, is this ever going to come back at you? And it did in a huge way. Friends showed up. I was able to stay at a friend's house. She just sacrificed her family, gave me her office to sleep in and be in. And it was just tremendous. Do not ever deny yourself the opportunity to caregive, because also I was able to make connections with my parents. Everybody has problems with their parents. You don't get to be born without having that. And there was so much healing happening. That was amazing. With my brother, it's a whole other thing. Now, through all of this, the financial aspect was part of the devastation. Not just the emotional part was actually not so much of the devastation. The financial, yes. You can't work a full-time job. I couldn't, anyway. I was coming out of college. I was one of those people coming out of college who had to sort of dash the future and plans to do these immediate things. And that has put me on Medi-Cal. Now, I have a small sliver left of an inheritance, but it's just a sliver at this point. And yet, that will not pass the asset test that is looming over my head for next year that will throw me off Medi-Cal. And the only thing that has saved me is my friends, because I have no family left. My brother can't take care of me, obviously. And Medi-Cal. And I'm panicked. Can Matt Haney or any of you on the panel address any of this? And God bless you, Rose. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Assemblymember Haney, we did a show about the asset test, and it's going to change, right? Or is it? Can you give us an update?
Yes. So there was a proposal initially from the governor that would have really just dramatically changed the asset test. I think the initial proposal was just a few thousand dollars, essentially. If you had $2,000 in assets, that could affect whether you qualified for Medi-Cal, which could mean including IHSS. We rejected that, and I think very dramatically reversed it. So I think it was back to over $130,000. So he proposed $2,000 is $130,000. Again, for some folks, that's still, I mean, if you have an inheritance or you have something that you're living off of over time, that can still be a challenge. Or if you own a home, I mean, some people have a single asset that they rely on. It doesn't mean that they have enough money to spend on these huge premiums for healthcare. It's a ridiculous concept that they would, starting at $2,000. So we reversed it, and so now it's $130,000 is the asset test. What fear is that with these new cuts from the federal government, that we're going to continue to see these efforts to create these new stricter requirements on eligibility for Medicaid, whether it's an asset test, whether it's constantly having to reapply, whether it's, again, folks who are sort of undocumented, age requirements, work requirements, all of this is intended to push folks off of access to care, many people who desperately, desperately need it and absolutely cannot afford it on the private market. And thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for the care that you've provided, and all of us hope that you're able to continue to receive the support that you need and that you so much deserve. This is a profession that is so challenging for the people who engage in it, and it's not just about the financial to make sure that they can survive. It's all of the support that they're going to continue to need, themselves having access to health care. I mean, that's also what's criminal about this, is folks are providing care themselves and not having health care themselves. And in an ongoing way for something that we know can cause physical and mental and emotional strains. And so, you know, thank you for sharing that. And we will continue to fight to make sure that they don't reimpose those types of asset tests.
Thank you so much. We're almost out of time. Kelly, your final thoughts?
I promised a phone number, 415-355-6700.
And Chris, your final thoughts?
I was struck by one of the things that our last questioner just brought up as an aside, which was about work. And one of the things that we came across when making the film was how hard it was for so many people to be able to juggle work and care. And it seems to me that I talked earlier about caregiving youth. It seemed to me this is another area where all of us can help try and change things. As we know, most companies now have come to introduce childcare policies, but very, very few have. I don't know what the situation is in California, but I know nationwide, very, very few have care policies. So encouraging employers to adapt those childcare policies, to make them care policies. So if you're looking after a parent, if you're looking after a sibling, as in your case, that there's flexibility, that there's accommodations. It's something, again, that all of us can do, that we can take action at a grassroots level, and that could impact millions and millions of caregivers. And so I'd encourage people to do that too.
Well, thank you so much. Chris Darens is a documentary filmmaker, and I hope you can all watch the documentary Caregivers. Find it online at wellbeings.org. Will it still be airing on PBS?
Yeah, it's on PBS, and you can also share your story at shareyourcaregivingstory.org.
Kelly Dearman is Executive Director of the Department of Disability and Aging Services at the San Francisco Human Services Agency. Assemblymember Matt Haney has sponsored AB 283 to address the crisis in caregiving. So if you'd like to find out more about that or raise your voice on this, it's AB 283. Thank you all so much for joining us and coming tonight.
Thank you.
And thank you all so much for coming to the library. And thanks to everyone who worked on tonight's show. And thanks to the library staff. Thank you so much.